You're on the record.
Thank you, Corinne. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Ada's 10 a.m. May 31st board meeting. I'd like to call this meeting to order, and then I'd like to proceed, Corinne, if you would call the board members, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Here.
Mr. Carr.
Yes.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Barnhill.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public, please?
I'd like one to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Joel Fuller, Art Department.
Alan Bailey, Petroleum News.
Jeff Van Juan, Ada.
Connie Carl.
Donald and Lee, Mr. Bunn.
Dan Britton, Fantex.
Jim Van South, Ada.
And Mr. Sandra Petro.
Philip Braden, Alaska.
American Ada.
David Bennett, Alaska USA Federal Credit Union.
Bill Phelan, Ada.
Mike Hansen, Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Linda Sen, Ada.
Jonah Stewart, Terry Gass.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Kathy Blackford, Charlie Lindenshaw.
Gary G. Ada, Department of Law.
Brenda Appleby, Ada.
Karsten Affleck, Ada.
Brent Templeton, Ada. Do we have public on the phone?
Pamela True, IGU.
Anybody else on the phone?
Wade Ellis with HDR.
Anybody else?
Thank you, Fran. Next up for
Hello? Was there somebody else there?
Yes, this is Gene Cario.
Okay.
Where are we at today, Gene?
In Vienna.
Nice. And item number, next thing up is our agenda approval. Can I take a motion for that?
So moved.
Second.
Without objection, and May 31st agenda is approved. Brings us to item number five, public comments. So, as usual, a drill. Please limit 3 minutes per person. I'd like to get your full, state your full name, any affiliation, if you would have any. And I will start in the room. Does anybody want to make a public comment in the room? The boardroom here. Jamal, for the record, just state your full name and affiliation.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jamal Stewart, and I am the general manager of the Interior Gas Utility down from Fairbanks, Alaska. And if all goes well today, within a couple hours, my official position as general manager of the Interior Gas Utility will be redundant and on the wane. And so it's, I did want to come before the IATA board, and I have the pleasure of informing you that the IGU board did act on Tuesday at their board meeting to authorize me to execute the final closing documents on the Pentex purchase and the acceptance of IEP financing. And so that's really why I'm here. Of course, I would like to say just right at the very top to all the members of my own board, the members of your board, particularly the members of your staff, a big thank you. It's been a long road, but we're here. So I did want to, if I could, Mr. Chairman, we did act, again, to authorize me to execute the final closing documents, but in the process of doing so, we had to grant a waiver to one of the conditions precedent. In the process of granting that waiver, the board did put together a letter agreement asking for a couple things, or really, a couple things on the ADA end for granting of that conditional waiver. A letter agreement was drafted. The source of the letter agreement actually started with the chair-to-chair letter between yourselves and, or yourself, sir, and my board chair, Pamela Throop. In that letter, I believe this was in April, There was a request on the part of ADA that its personnel be allowed to have a bit more access to information, a seat at the table to participate in discussions regarding certain components of the project, and an offer of assistance from your personnel in performing some reviews and analysis and coming to decision-making. And so that chair-to-chair letter moved forward into discussions between yourself and Chair Throop. On Tuesday of last week, or the week before, May 22nd, that letter agreement was drafted, essentially codifying things that were already either A, already in process, but we wanted to just go ahead and codify the plan, things that had been discussed verbally. We wanted to get in writing, and then to codify that process regarding review and analysis of things that might lead to scope revisions under the PSAFA. And so a draft letter agreement was drafted, provided to yourself, sir, and the subgroup on May 22nd. You all voiced some concerns regarding the contents of the letter agreement, some of the language. And so the letter agreement was revised and re-provided to yourselves on Friday of last week and then was included in our packet. It was again reviewed by ADA. And so at our board meeting on Tuesday, Mr. Terrio called in and stated some specific concerns remaining in that letter agreement, particularly regarding Section 3 that talked about a review of proposals and a process for review of proposals collaboratively. And so that the letter agreement was further revised to address those concerns. Again, I believe the letter agreement has been provided to your directors. And so, after making those final revisions, again, based on the input of yourselves and your representatives, we did finalize that letter agreement, and it was included, appended to the resolution that authorized me to execute the closing documents. And so, just wanted to say for the record, that again, this has been a long process. It is hoped that you all will accept the letter agreement. So that we can close. I actually have right here before me all the documents that I was supposed to bring down in hard copy for signature. And so I am ready to go. Hope was ready to go yesterday, but I'm just as ready to go today. The cities of Fairbanks and North Pole and the Fairbanks North Star Borough have come together to form the interior gas utility, bringing together a team of professionals. They're highly competent people with significant experience in utility management and oversight, so that we would be in a position to accept the local control that comes with becoming the LCE, as it was originally termed here at ADA, the local control entity for the Interior Energy Project. And so if you have any questions, I'm here to attempt answers. But again, in summation, I just wanted to say thank you very much. Again, it's been a long process, but I believe a very fruitful one, and it is quite pleasing to be here today to inform you that we're ready to close, and we hope that you will so authorize John Springsteen so that we can get this done.
Thank you, Joe. Well, just out of clarification, John, has everybody got the copy of that letter agreement?
I don't have it, unless it's in this packet.
I didn't bring my. I got it.
They were distributed digitally, and I do have copies.
All right, would you pass that along to everybody, make sure get everybody another copy? Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Stewart? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, thanks for being here this morning. A couple things I think we should clarify. You talked about chair-to-chair communications a few weeks, months ago. I just want to make sure I understand, and for the record, ADA requested to be involved in issues that were coming forward as we approached May 31st. And that was done in a letter. Subsequent to that, from our chair to your chair, subsequent to that, we received communications back that offer was acceptable. Right. And so in your mind, would that include any input that we would get that IGU would get from ADA would be welcomed and accepted in the spirit of moving this project forward? Anybody that's associated with ADA or contracted with ADA?
It would be my expectation.
Pardon?
It would be my expectation.
Okay, thank you. I want to make sure. I'm curious to get on the record. I don't understand, and help me understand. You signed the document moving forward, our FASA, that we spent 18 months on. We finally got that to close on December 7th, if I remember right.
Fifth. Signed on 13th.
So we signed it in early December. There were some lingering issues about some due diligence that perhaps may have been late in coming. And so we held out closing until this date. So that was almost 7 months ago. I'm curious as to why ADA was presented with this alteration of the deal that we made in December. Unilateral change, by the way. You folks changed it without any consultation or warning to us. I'm curious, why did that take almost 7 months to bring to us? And what amounts to, it was dropped on us 48 hours before this deal was to close. So obviously that puts us, and just by the very, very, very example today, we all don't have copies of the document. What happened in those 7 months, Jomo, that moved us from the due diligence issue, which I think we put to bed most people's liking? Why did it take so long to decide that we needed to change the deal that may or may not be a substantial change?
Okay. First of all, it doesn't appear that anything that's being provided is a real economic change to the underpinning provisions within the agreement. So that's the first thing. So regarding unilateral action and timing, on October 26th, I came down here for a NADA board meeting where, in fact, I had received, not 12 hours before, the final draft that I had to act on, and had to try to speak to a document that you were taking unilateral action on. There had been zero consultation on that. This is actually quite different. As I listed for you the dates, what is really the linchpin of this discussion is Article 3 within the letter agreement. What it really regards is a review of a particular proposal. We have a Plan A that's been built into the PSA and FA. However, we have received a proposal from someone who believes they can get the job done under a different configuration of the project. That was brought forward. Again, as far as the timing is concerned, again, it's the language that's within the letter agreement. It's been discussed actually between certainly the higher levels of the ADA board for almost a month, if not over a month. Again, the chair-to-chair letter made a certain request. Really, the chair-to-chair letter made two requests. We were considering something regarding gas supply, and you all had heard actually at that same October 26th meeting from that project proposer. It was Siemens. So you had heard from them directly. They came to the board meeting and they used the public comment period to make their pitch. So that's that. So the chair-to-chair letter asked for really inclusion in discussions regarding the gas supply and any interactions we may have as a project relative to Siemens. Again, there was conversation. There was a charrette that occurred, an open public charrette at which you were present. Where that particular proposer made their pitch. It was decided, it was recognized at that time that there was an inconsistency in assumption sets between what was presented by that proposer and what was underpinning our Plan A analysis. And it was discussed to go ahead and simply have a process where...
We're going to come, I think, to that subject at a later time.
Oh, all right. Well, then just specifically regarding unilateral action.
All I wanted to get on the record was why this significant or insignificant action came to ADA 48 hours before the end of the deal, when there's been almost 7 months to develop it, communicate, So that we were all on the same page before this was dropped on us.
Sir, if I may, this was not dropped on you.
Okay.
We all understand that there are conditions precedent built into the PSA and FA. We have waited as long as humanly possible to try to allow everyone to satisfy all of those conditions precedent. Mm-hmm. IGU completed all of its conditions precedent. ADA, however, and it's not a blame item, but ADA was unable to satisfy one of the conditions precedent, necessitating a waiver. The action to do that waiver or grant that waiver was on Tuesday. As far as the contents of
it, to the pad.
North Slope pad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to grant the waiver on the North Slope pad, as far as the letter agreement was concerned, mm-hmm. that if it wasn't provided to your entire board, it was provided, again, it's been an active point of discussion between yourself, Chairman Cruz, my chair, and other members of my board. The letter agreement itself was distributed multiple times, has been revised, but was really based on agreements and discussions between IGU and ADA, has been revised per your input, and was finalized with your final input on Tuesday. So it only got finalized on Tuesday. And then was immediately provided to yourself and your enterprise.
So when you're referring to, Jamal, just to clarify for the record, when you're referring to ADA folks here, it's really the IEP team,
subcommittee,
and the IEP team, the lead, and Gene Terrio and whatnot. So I just want to make sure that's clear that for the other board members who the conversation is going with. Okay, I want to finish this up. This is a public comment section, and so Gary, if you have any follow-up real quick.
Yeah, I just want to get this on the record, because to me it's very important, the timing. This board can't act on anything until we have something from you. We didn't have anything from you until 6:30 on Tuesday night. So I don't want to talk about October. I want to talk about why this notion of changing the structure of the deal we created in December took 7 months. And I'm going to leave that on the table because I think we're going to come back to this whole discussion in the future. But I want to just lay that in front of you, Jomo, to think a little bit about, because I'm confused as to why the timing was what it is. And I need some help in understanding.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks, Jomo.
Thank you. Any further questions for Jomo? Thanks, Jomo. Oh, wait.
Just one quick question. The only thing that's been changed in here is what's highlighted in red. Is that correct?
Those were the final revisions on Tuesday evening. Again, in response to the specific concerns that were raised by Gene Terrio at the board meeting on Tuesday.
Was Gene available? Did he help with the... did Gene give input on what I see here in these corrections?
Correct. He pointed out that... Per the letter agreement, as you can see from the version that had been in packet at the board meeting, it called for asking DNR for a letter agreement similar to this to codify the process for eventual transference, securing the asset, i.e. the North Slope pad, and maximizing its value. Gene pointed out that it might be problematic to try to lock in DNR for that kind of letter agreement, and so we revised the language to simply really codify what is, in fact, the process right now. ADA is negotiating with DNR on IGU's behalf, and that we would work together to try to secure the asset and maximize its value.
So
regarding the section on how we actually operationalize Section 8.8, which talked about scope revisions and how they might be effectuated, how they'd be discussed and how they'd be effectuated. What we have before us are the additional sections that really flesh that out. Now, Mr. Terrio noted that specific to this particular contractor, the original language had almost made Siemens a co-equal with ADA and IGU in that review and recommendation process. And he opined that he felt that was probably inappropriate to have a contractor have to have that level of input, and the board agreed. And so we revised the language so that if you take out all of the names, the specific names like Brown Thornton, Mark Gardner, Siemens, what you have before us is a process that ensures that there will be collaborative discussion and analysis regarding possible scope revisions. We will call in independent actors or independent consultants to give us professional advice and recommendations should we need it. And then we will work together to come to a collaborative, mutually agreeable path forward. And so, but that the principals, IGU and ADA, are the real recommendations that matter.
Jumbo,
and so we made that revision.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I just want one further clarification question. If the collaborative effort doesn't work, what happens? Nothing happens. It's independent veto power between both IGU and ADA.
Certainly, that there is that possibility. Really, what
well, it is or it isn't. I mean,
it's well, two things.
I'm reading this. It says recommendation. Recommendations don't have to be agreed to.
When the final, if the recommendation of the independent consultant, well, the recommendation of the independent consultant will go individually to the IGU board and the ADA boards for action.
Mm-hmm.
Should they still differ? Well, I guess there's a couple of different ways we can go about it. The way we've gone about the PSA and FA is that we will sit in rooms and we will keep talking until we find agreement, until we reach agreement on a path forward. However, built into the PSA and FA, there are the sections, I believe it's 11.6 points, I can't remember off the top of my head, but that talks about arbitration. So there is a final mechanism where we could see arbitration, binding arbitration to resolve differences. And that is still within the PSA method. That hasn't gone away. And so again, there's really two paths. We work together in collaboration and partnership until we do reach that agreement on the path forward, or we could go to an independent arbiter to help us reach that agreement.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sir.
Further questions?
I understand, but we'll circle back.
We'll circle back.
Okay. I have some comments. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, anybody in the boardroom here? Go ahead. You might have to please state your name and affiliation.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Wainwright, and I am here on my own behalf today. I've addressed this body before about the Ambler Road, and I'm here with another matter that I think is of primary importance with respect to the Ambler Road. I'm here to ask for a transparent process of the funding of both the EIS process and the possible funding for the road. In 2014, I was here, and we asked for the same transparent process, and staff did commit to coming forward with the costs of the EIS, and that has not occurred as far as I know. I looked back at board minutes, and I didn't see any, but if it has, I apologize. But the information we have to date is from the ADA response to the governor's administrative order in 2015 that said, up to date, $9.25 million had been spent on the Ambler Road by DOTPUF, which ADA then assumed the project. And then in fiscal years 2011-13, ADA received $17 million for the EIS process. And then in January 2015, ADA said they needed another $6.8 million, and so the total of that is $33.5 million just for the EIS. ADA also has a document that says the funding for the third-party contractor for the EIS is $10 million. In November 2015, they said just the scoping portion of the EIS, which is just the beginning portion, not the studies, not the analysis, is $3.195 million. So all these numbers have been rolling around, and then recently the legislature asked for a figure, and ADA staff, and I have the letter here, submitted a document saying that $17 million had been expended for the 2013 to 2015 timeframe. Well, we're now in 2018. So it would be very helpful for the public to know what has been spent on the Ambler Road studies EIS to date, total, both the $9.25 million the DOTPUF did, we know that, but what has ADA spent? And that would be very helpful, because the remaining work on the EIS is extensive. ADA's application contains more than 56,000 pages and nearly 1,000 detailed maps, which the agencies and the contractors have to review. the BLM, just the summary of the comments that came in during the scoping period, have over 1,000 different comment topics with over 70,000 comments submitted. All that has to be gone through, responded to, analyzed. A lot of the data in the ADA studies to date are 3 to 8 years old, so it's unknown how much more study will have to be done to complete the EIS process. And so it's important that if that process continues, we know how much it's going to cost, we know what the studies that need to be completed are, and that this board approves of that amount being spent. The other issue that I'd like to highlight is not just the EIS process, which we really would like to know, but the cost of the road have been equally varied in different documents over time that both ADA and DOTPUF have produced. And I was looking through the ADA website, and I came across this organization's 2017 report on the DeLong Mountain Transportation System port, where it talked about a project that was going to go on at the port. And after an independent economic analysis, I believe it was in 2005 or something, that project was abandoned. And I would like to know, before we get to that point where lots of money is spent, if this project is also economically viable. So I'm here to request that ADA ask for an independent economic analysis of the cost of the road. And so I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Any questions from the board? Gary?
Thank you for being here again. Can you distill that down, and get it to us through Mr. Springsteen so that we can do a Q&A, ask the question, and we'll provide the answer?
I can, and I actually have the documents here, but I didn't make copies, so I'll make copies and put that and distill it down.
Is that all right with you, John? Is that okay?
Certainly, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for being here.
Okay,
thank you. Okay. Any further folks in the boardroom? Seeing none? Anybody online wishing to make a 3-minute comment? Anyone?
Yes, this is the,
hello. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, this is Bryce Ward. Is this on any item on the agenda? I apologize. I just
Yes.
Bryce Ward,
so, Bryce Ward, there in North Pole, is that who I'm talking with?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, Bryce, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and give testimony on the IGU IEP contract and encourage folks to consider the changes that were made by the IGU board. As mayor from the city of North Pole, the city has taken many actions, resolutions in support of the IEP, and I understand that there's some concern with the changes that were made to the contract on Tuesday night's meeting. And you know, if there is at all any of the flexibility that the board is requesting to consider a plan B, if you will, not at the expense of plan A, which is the Titan expansion, I would highly encourage folks to consider that. If there is a small amount of flexibility that can allow that, I think that would be greatly beneficial. We need the project to happen. I know many of the folks on the ADA board are business members themselves, and I think in light of the considerations and really the purpose of the IEP, which is to bring as many people online with gas as quick as possible with the cheapest cost, that if there is a possibility of doing that, that limits liability to the project, that that's not at an expense of the project itself, I would encourage folks to be flexible in that. And like I had mentioned earlier, so the project is really needed, especially in the North Pole area. If you look at the expansion, the air quality issues that we have, I think that the gas project is a key component to that. And I thank everyone for their efforts. I know this is I think I've been involved now for about 5 or 6 years since I first got elected to serve the people of North Pole. And, you know, it's a long time coming, but being this close to the finish line, I would hate for us to get held up on some minor changes or minor details. Appreciate the opportunity to testify before you guys can see this afternoon, or this morning, excuse me.
Thank you, Mayor. Questions for Mayor Ward? Appreciate your testimony, Mayor. Is there anybody else?
Thank you.
Anybody else online wishing to make a comment?
Yes. Good morning. This is Lynnine Livingston calling from Fairbanks North Suburban Mayor Carl Castle's office.
Okay. Lynnine, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I'm calling in support of the purchase of Pentex as IGU is presenting. Mayor Castle, unfortunately, is out of state. However, I did speak with him this morning, and he did ask that I pass along the administration's support for getting this project moving forward. We are absolutely confident that the project will benefit the interior for many years to come, and we certainly thank ADA and IGU for all of their work that's been done, and we hope that we can get the project moving as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Lynnine. Any questions for her from the board? Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you,
gentlemen. Anybody else online wishing to make a comment?
Yes. This is Pamela Troop. I'm the chair of the IGU board. I would like to...
Go ahead, Pamela.
I'd like to make a couple of comments. I want to thank everyone there for all their efforts with this process. It's been really a long process. I haven't been as involved as long as some of the people have been who are serving on our IGU board and perhaps some of the people at ADA. But I would like to say that we're ready to go forward. We did, as you and I talked, Chair Cruz agreed that we could have an ability to look at another proposal that might be a benefit to the ratepayers. It's an unknown yet if it would be exactly, but we would like the opportunity to do that within the next couple of months to flesh that out. We're ready to go forward with the North Slope pad. We understand that. That there may or may not be money flowing through ADA to IGU, depending on what DNR does and what kind of an agreement we can come to, you can come to with them, and what it subsequently might be sold for. I know that there was a question about any conflict with Mr. Wilkin and Mr. Stewart, and I think that whatever issue we get to, that the two entities can sit down and determine the best way forward for the ratepayers of this community. We really want this project to go forward. We want to get started as soon as possible and stand up this fledgling little utility here in Fairbanks. So That's all I have for this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Gary?
Mr. Thank you for being here this morning. But just for the record, I don't have any conflicts with Jomo. I've worked with Jomo for over 20 years on all sorts of things. We've done some good, and we've had a lot of fun. So that's not an issue.
No, I meant the issue about if there's a conflict between ADA and IGU. Yeah. That's what I meant. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let me ask you some questions that arose from your comments before the vote on Tuesday night. I think it will be helpful for the board for you to explain some of the things you said. For the vote, you made four statements that perplexed me, and I'd like for you to help us understand. You said ADA has not done any favors for IGU, and you went on to talk about the Anchorage has been treated better with gas supply and that, and Fairbanks is being treated Would you like to expand on that a little bit so that I can understand it better?
Well, my understanding, Mr. Wilkin, is that the credits that have been given to the gas producers in Cook Inlet has had a direct benefit to the rate payers and of the utilities in Anchorage. And that what I meant was that we have not gotten that. We're getting a loan. The terms are great. From a commercial perspective, I'm not sure exactly how I feel about all of this. Like I said in the meeting the other night, I talked with someone who had convinced me to change my mind about my voting. And that's what I mean. I feel like the resources of the state of Alaska belong to everybody, not just a few, and that we should all have equal access to the money or those resources.
Thank you. And I don't mean to skewer you with your statements. I only am perplexed, puzzled by what they mean to me. And let me go to the second thing you said. The loans and terms supplied by ADA are no big deal. I'm struggling to understand why a 0.25% with 15 to 20 years holiday, what makes this utility almost debt-free in many respects, is no big deal. Would you explain why ADA hasn't played a part in that and done a favor for IGU?
Well, the money came through the legislature, is my understanding. We were going to have the money, and the money could have been loaned to us for zero interest. And again, I'm comparing it in my mind to the benefit that has been given to the people in the South Central area who've had the benefit of low-cost fuel for many, many years, and we have not. So that's precisely what I mean. I would like to have seen us to have had the money at no cost and perhaps not paying it back more in the terms of to be more equal to what the population in the South Central area has enjoyed.
Yeah, I think we all wish we were back in 58. 59 when those deals were put together, their benefit. Let's move to the Cardinal study. You made the statement Tuesday night in your preface the vote that you thought the Cardinal study was too optimistic, and in IGU's case, that's a 35% conversion. Would you talk a little bit about where you think perhaps that it would not be optimistic? What do you think to be realistic?
I think on a case-by-case basis, the cost of converting residential families is going to be very difficult and a financial burden for the people in Fairbanks at this time. I think that as the price of oil goes up, it's going to be a little bit less, but there are many, many people who have left here, many families, and salaries are coming down. So I see it as a more difficult challenge than what the Cardinal study said originally. And when the price of gas, when the price of diesel was under $2, I think the Cardinal study was really out of whack. And I understand this was all done originally when it was $4 to $5. And we're going back up there. So that may absolutely help our conversions. And I really hope it does. And I hope, and I'm counting on us here in Fairbanks to be able to find some other assistance for us, for people to convert, whether it's in the form of grants or loans or whatever we can arrange with the local banks on bill payment that Mr. Terrio was worked really hard with some other people this year and Mr. Wohl to get the legislature to approve. So, I'm just concerned that from where I sit, that it might be optimistic.
All right, thank you. I have two more, one of which is you were concerned about the price we paid for Pentax. We've whipped that around for a couple of years, so I don't need to talk about that. The last is that you had reservations about this plan because we had no gas contract in hand after our third year. We have tried to, Ada has tried to get some sense of the contract that is that you folks are thinking of moving ahead, but we have been shut out of that. So I was a bit surprised when you used that as a reason why you were concerned about this utility moving forward. Would you comment on the lack of a gas contract and how that affected your feelings in regard to this this project?
Well, if we end up paying $7 or $8 MCF for gas, it's going to be more challenging to reach that 35% that's indicated in the Cardinal report. And I, at several points along the way of the gas negotiations over the last several years, my understanding was that there might have been gas at some better prices. And now we have, you know, in Cook Inlet, we have a company that controls a lot of the pricing there. So unless there's other developers out there that are doing things, we may be stuck with that $8 gas. And I wish that we had a better contract. And I'm sure we'll continue looking for something.
Well, we agree on that, and I appreciate your time and your reply. We're going to come back to that gas contract question later in our agenda when you'll be asked to tell Ada that contract that is pending. But we won't go into that right now. So thank you, Chairman, for being there and for your help. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
you. You're welcome. Thank you, Chair Green. Any further questions from the Chair, as you chair? Is there anybody else online wishing to make a comment? Hearing none, I will close the public comment period here, Section 5, and go to item number 6, prior minutes for April 26, 2018.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Hi, this is Mike Barnhill. I'd like to ask that the minutes be amended on the bottom of page 3 to reflect that I, and this is Mike Barnhill, did not participate in the executive session with respect to Mach 1 because of a conflict of interest.
All right. Any objections? That's adopted. Any other changes?
Thank you,
Mike. Any other changes, recommendations, or hearing no, we will, those minutes are adopted. That brings us to item number 7, new business, which is number A, loan number L18-02, MHS Enterprise, LLC. John?
Item 7A, resolution L18-02, regards the purchase by the authority of a participation in a loan to MSH Enterprises, LLC. The loan is for a newly constructed 21,628-square-foot medical office building located in the UMed District of Anchorage. The financing supports 105 construction jobs and 25 new permanent jobs. The dollar amount of ADA's participation is $6,581,250. At this time, I ask Chris Anderson to present.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
You seem to be getting a lot of new medical buildings.
Yes, it's a popular item, and it's a very active industry.
Yeah, popular in the valley, too, I see.
It is. Very much so.
We're getting older.
Yeah.
We all
getting
need
Gary's got damn near everything replaced.
I know. Getting more expensive.
I love it, too.
Well, as John indicated, the borrower on this credit is MSH Enterprises, LLC, and the gross loan amount is $7,312,500, and ADA is being asked to participate on a 90-10 basis of $6,981,250. Our term would be 25 years. The last USA is in for 14 years. We would be on a rate basis. The guarantors on this credit are Dr. Matt Halala and his wife, Stacy. Also, their living trust, dated June 23rd, 2004, Matt Halala, DPM, Inc., DBA, Alaska Foot and Ankle Specialist, which is his business. Ada would be paying off Alaska USA's construction loan. And this building is well located in the UMed district, just off of Lake Otis and East 42nd.
Did you have a chance to look at it?
Yeah. It's just dirt work right now, but I have a picture of the lot, and I also have pictures of the architect's drawing if you're interested in seeing what the building will look like eventually.
So could you go through real quickly the process of when it transfers from a construction loan to long-term financing as far as what process you go through?
Yes, we have certainly a detailed list of documents that have to be in place before we go forward and fund. And in regards to this particular building, Dr. Halala, it's a two-story building, and he's taking the full second floor, and then the first floor would be leased out, to be leased out. And we would not be funding the loan until all of it's leased out.
And so do we lock in a rate today, or do we wait until...
We lock in a rate today when we commit. Mm-hmm. And,
so
and there's a time...
How long will it be before it's finished?
It'll be... Well, we give them a one-year commitment on something like this. When it's not construction, it's a six-month commitment.
Okay.
So on new construction, it's a one-year commitment.
And then after 12 months, if it's not finished, what happens?
Then they can go into an extension period. And the extension period is every 30 days. And for this commitment, we charge a 1% fee. And as they go into an extension period, we charge 1/8 of 1% for every 30 days they go past.
What about the rates?
The rate
is still locked in?
The rate is still locked in.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's prudent?
I don't think that rates are moving all that quickly, although I know that the... The prognosis is that rates are going to go up. But, you know, it's what Ada has always done, is locked in up front.
Is there a reason why?
Well...
I could see lock it in for time certain. But after time certain, I'm kind of questioning with markets the flexibility and volatility. What is your opinion of what we should do? We should just leave it locked in, or... Or if it takes an extra year or a year and a half to finish, or what?
Well, I think you're giving, you know, with the extension fee, you're being paid. I mean, you're being paid for that extension.
But
so
not at closing time, the cost of money.
Pardon me?
For the long term. At closing, the cost of money will may change to Ada, better or for worse for the consumer, mm-hmm. obviously. If it's better, we want to give them the benefit.
Sure. You know, you have to find that balance, though, between Ada and the borrower. You know, the borrower is, you know, Ada is taking that interest rate risk over that time period. But, you know, to give them no certainty and to just commit when you fund, you know, where is your balance?
Well, again, I don't know what the answer is. I'm just asking the question.
Well, it's an interesting discussion.
It's you know, I guess I'm old enough to remember when interest rates went to 22%.
Believe me, I remember the days.
And it happened fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And so I just want to make sure that there's a, you know, maybe review that process, John. You know, if a commitment is made, commitment is kept, if the construction takes longer and the market's changed, what is a reasonable solution?
We can have that discussion.
Okay. Continue.
Dr. Halala does have management experience. It includes operating his own successful medical practice since 2000. And the collateral, we would take a first deed of trust on the property, on the improvement. This was appraised by Reliant Advisory Services at $9,750,000 as complete. That gives us a 75% loan to value, taking the proposed debt service coverage within the appraisal, and our debt service is 1.51 to 1, so it gives us sufficient coverage. We also do have a related debt with Dr. Halala and his wife. They guarantee a loan that we concluded on the medical office building in Wasilla that houses the surgery center there, as well as several other medical-related companies. With that, with this proposed credit, assuming approval and the existing credit, we would have total outstanding with his guarantees of $13,456,847. We saw no environmental issues, and in regards to the market, we looked at AEDC's outlook for the healthcare sector in Anchorage. And it is positive. In 2017, Anchorage's healthcare sector posted 800 new jobs. Within the Anchorage commercial real estate market, the appraiser had identified medical office properties in the UMed district as being very stable. And a review of Alaska's MLS listings by the appraiser concluded that vacancies within the medical office market are likely to be below 3%, which in an environment like this is a very healthy vacancy factor. The strengths that we saw in the credit, again, the debt service coverage of 1.51:1, its owner, partial tenant, is a well-established medical practice. They're not just a startup. Medical office supply in the UMed district is in demand, and the owners and guarantors provide strong outside financial support to the credit. We saw no weaknesses other than the risk beyond typical market risk. In regards to the portfolio diversification, numbers as of March 31st, ADA had 22.9% of its total statewide portfolio secured by office-type properties, and with this credit, that would increase to 24.2%. And for participated credits within just the Anchorage region, we're at 33.1% of ADA's total portfolio that is attributed to office projects, not just medical office, and that would increase to 35.3%. We felt that this loan participation is a good credit. Staff does recommend it, and I would open it to questions.
Questions from the board? I've got a few, surprisingly.
All right.
At an exposure of $13 million for an individual borrower, where does that put it in the hierarchy as far as exposure to the loans? You have it based on what the loan is for, but not based on credit risk for whether it's organizations or companies or whatever. So $13 million, is it the top 25%, 50%? Where would you put
where, that? Where does that number fall?
Yeah.
I would say that probably falls within our top 10. Top 10 within the portfolio.
Top 10?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does any of the performance to make it successful, does it have to be generated by the individual or is it by an organization? Is there a critical man component to this cash flow that you're protecting?
I would say that he has a business that's deeper than just himself. If we're dealing with a business that is solely dependent on one individual, we usually ask for key man life insurance. And in this kind of situation where he has an organization, employees, typically not. You're looking at him. I mean, he is obviously running this business. In this instance, we wouldn't typically get him in line.
But he's
personally guaranteeing as well. So, you look.
So if he's out of the picture, what happens? Something happens. I'm just playing the what if game.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens and he can't, come to work every day. Does the organization still stand on it?
Yes. I think
and you do it, and not to pick this individual out because it's just kind of the questions I've always had. Do you do an analysis of that? A certain volume of loan or?
No, I mean two things can happen. There may be somebody in his company who can step up.
I would hope so, but I'm just asking.
And the business itself might be sold.
Does ADA do an analysis of that when they do a loan? And if they do, is there a threshold, a minimum threshold loan amount that you do it above to make to on that? This is, you say it's a top 10, it's $13 million. Do you do that kind of analysis?
No, you make your decision going in. And certainly things can change over time. But, you know, as long as your debt service is being paid, we don't go into extensive analysis in that regard. We certainly stay in touch with the lender, and the lender stays in touch with the borrower. We do have conversations with the lender if there are any glitches, hitches in the credit over time. Those conversations certainly take place.
So in this particular case, the $13 million aggregate exposure that Ada has, you don't believe that the lender needs key man insurance?
No.
Okay. And you base that decision on what?
I don't consider this just a sole practitioner type of operation.
So is there does your group do a breakdown and understand that? I'm just trying to, functionality. Unfortunately, there's, you know, this is an example, but I'm trying to get to the policy section of this, John, what we do, how we do it, and when you have a higher amount of exposure, what if there's a different process?
It's often recommended, if we're going to get Key Man Life, it's often recommended by the lender and part of their analysis of this. If we feel strongly about it when we're doing the underwriting and it hasn't been recommended by the lender, then we put in that recommendation.
And I'm trying to get to when you feel strongly about it. What's the trigger to make you feel strongly about it? What is that? That's what I'm trying to get to, actually.
All underwriting is, to some extent, subjective. So, again, I think it's with a sole practitioner that if they left, passed away, whatever the circumstance was, there's no succession planning, there's no one behind that individual. And perhaps in a business where it's, you know, it's not easy for someone to step in.
Okay. All right.
So Alaska USA Credit Union, they've totally reviewed this because
yes.
They're the lender, right?
That's correct.
And you, so they didn't recommend Key Man Insurance.
No, they did not.
And they reviewed all the same documents you reviewed, and they've looked at it as they want to get repaid. I mean, they've done their due diligence also.
That's true.
So it's more than just what you believe; it's what they believe also.
Right. They independently underwrite and approve, and
right.
When it comes to us, we do the same.
Thank you.
I would just make the comment that there's 700,000 of 14 million, 13 million. A little difference.
Well, I get it.
Yeah.
And
ideally, they should care too. But
yeah, they should. I'm trying to get to the process of when you do and when you don't. If there's something there, because a borrower should know before going into the process what the expectations are.
All I know is this Key Man Insurance is to me a hell of a burden. I had Key Man Insurance with $60,000 additional a year for a loan. That's ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. It really harms business.
It's expensive.
It is.
That's for one individual for one small loan, $60,000 a year additional.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you, Chris.
You're
Bren, would you have a question?
Move adoption of resolution L1802.
Second. Thank you. Quinn?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Faraday?
Aye.
Mr. Carl?
Aye.
Ms. Brown?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Barnhill?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Quinn. That brings us to item B, executive session. And
Mr. Chairman?
I'll entertain a motion.
Move the board enter in an executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the IEP, the Mustang Operations Center, Mach 1, and the LNG loan.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Thank you. All right, where are we going, Fred?
Are they staying in here? Or you staying in here? We are a bit leaving because we've got somebody calling in on the other phone.
Okay.
Who's going to be attending? And while the board is in executive session, this phone call will be turned off, and we'll need it for